This coming week after the election, hearings will begin for the City of Chicago's fiscal 2025 budget. With the city facing a nearly $1 billion shortfall, pension payments, and a still entangled public school budget, you may hear some tough talk by people who must make tough decisions. But the buck stops with our main guest this week, Mayor Brandon Johnson. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. On Wednesday, Mayor Johnson outlined his budget recommendations for the next year, a $17.3 billion spending plan. The headlines were mostly about the $300 million property tax increase. But there's a lot more to the budget than that, and we're going to talk about the budget and other issues swirling around it. Mayor Johnson has agreed to talk with WBBM News Radio, and he has his finance team with him, Budget Director Annette Guzman, Chief Financial Officer Jill Jaworski, and City Controller Chase Raywinkle. And I thank all of you for doing this. We're recording this interview at the mayor's office in City Hall. So, Mr. Mayor, thanks for having us in.
You're certainly welcome. Thanks for having us.
We are so pleased to be able to do that. I guess we should start, since we are doing this after the big budget announcement. I would have to think that even though you knew this would come, a headline like there was on the Sun-Times saying mayor's $300 million broken promise, if it's not, painful, it must at least make you wince a little bit.
Well, look, here's the important note for the people of Chicago to take down, is that I made a commitment and a promise to invest in people. And that's exactly what my first budget did, and that's what this next budget is going to continue to do. We've invested in youth employment and workforce development, hired almost 28,000 young people this past summer. We've seen a 32% increase in youth employment for summer positions. We've added an additional 2,000 positions for this summer. We made a commitment to invest in building more affordable homes since I've taken office. 3,400 homes have been built conservatively. We've put forth a bond investment to create more economic opportunities for the people of Chicago. It's the largest investment in the history of Chicago. We also made a commitment to behavioral mental health. We've expanded those services. We've moved away from a co-responder response. Now we're freeing up police officers to actually respond to other critical needs of our city. And we also made a commitment to community safety and critical investments there. Overall, this budget does a couple of things. One, it continues to invest in people. And that's what I promised. That's what we're doing. But we also made a commitment to respond to the structural damage to our city's finances that have been the prevailing form of governance for decades in this city. Our previous administrations, whether they closed schools, took away raises from educators, shut down public housing, sold off public assets, refused to pay into pensions and pay into the debt. They've kicked the can down the road. They've landed right in my front door. And we're going to take the responsible approach by being fiscally adhering to the aspirations of the people of Chicago to ensure that the political malfeasance that has existed for too long, that we respond to the structural damage while also making critical investments. The last thing that I'll say is, Craig, is look, we put forth a vision to create more progressive revenue streams. And the interests of corporations and the ultra wealthy in this city, in this state, have spent hundreds of millions of dollars on smear campaigns to confuse voters. Had we passed the progressive revenue ideas that I've pushed for, that the governor of Illinois has pushed for, we wouldn't be in this predicament. What I will say is this, though. We're not going to continue down the path of self-destruction. And as difficult as this moment is, of course, I didn't want to have to address the $1 billion budget deficit with raising property taxes. But after $700 million of cost savings, we had a choice. We either lay off police officers, firefighters, streets and sanitation workers, or ask homeowners to lean in a little bit more. And I know that's difficult, that's hard, that's not something that I wanted to do, but left with very few options on revenue, and not wanting to cut and lay off our neighbors, this is what I've proposed.
How do you convince the city's residents that their sacrifice is powering not only, it's powering the programs that you're going to do, but is preserving the jobs that, you know, some of them might say, wait a minute, though, there must be some waste in city government. There must be some things that should be trimmed.
Well, like any corporation, government also has its spaces where we can be more efficient. And we have cut and we have made more efficiencies within city government. This year's budget, 2024, we've already saved the taxpayers just a little bit over $200 million. In this upcoming budget, we're at $300 million. We've asked every single department to cut 3% minimally. Some of them have gone beyond that 3% because they understand what the assignment is in this moment. But 45% of the corporate fund, that's what we're talking about. It comprises of public safety. It's 45%. In order for us to meet that $300 million gap, the type of cuts that we would have to make to government would be quite severe. We're talking conservatively 2,500 police officers, 600 firefighters, 200 personnel in streets and sanitation. These are our neighbors, right? And so left with very few options here. Again, our preference was to bring Chicago home. $100 million that would have generated for our local economy. The progressive income tax, I believe we're one of, 11 states that doesn't have a progressive income tax, right? This would have transformed not just the city of Chicago, but the entire state of Illinois. And so when it came down to this final $300 million, laying off police officers, laying off firefighters, laying off city workers, was just not the healthiest pathway forward.
When we did talk with some alder people after your budget address, where there was some skepticism was people who said, wait a minute, why would most of the cuts have to come from public safety? There must be some other places in city government where there are people who don't need to be there or vacancies that don't need to be there.
We've closed all of the vacancies, essentially most of the vacancies, especially for, areas where, they were not as critical to providing the type of services that we know the people of Chicago still depend on. I'm going to pass it to my budget director here because, again, when 45% of the corporate funds are made up of police and fire, these are individuals who draw healthy salaries and benefits, which they should. We gave them raises in my administration. But it's important to note that we have made efficiencies, we've closed vacancies, and the cuts that would be necessary in order to meet that gap, there aren't too many people within our workforce where it would have been a sizable difference. But Annette?
No, that's absolutely right. The big thing to always remember is the percentages within the corporate fund. As the mayor rightfully said, 45% of the corporate fund is made up of our public safety infrastructure, police, fire, emergency management, and so forth. It just so happens that police also have the highest salaries within the city. And so when you talk about needing to close a gap of $300 million, that's 4,000 additional positions in the city, 17% reduction of our workforce. The bulk of that is going to have to come from public safety in order to meet the actual value of $300 million.
And let me follow up, because one of the things that other people and people in the public know that this budget is increasing services in a number of areas. Where will people be able to see the kind of investments that are being talked about, what'll be impacting on them that may make them feel better about the impact that they're going to feel from the increase?
Sure. I think there's a number of things that the mayor talked about in his speech yesterday that will have demonstrable impact on everyday lives of people. I'll just focus really quickly on public safety in general. So if you look at CPD and the decisions that they even made as it relates to the positions that were preserved in this budget, they were the positions that allowed police officers to be on the street, as well as certain civilian positions that they are retaining in order to live into the transition of officers from civilian work back into their law enforcement work. So that's really critical because that means more officers on the street. The other thing, we know that the city is going through an affordability housing crisis. And we see that in our neighborhoods. We see it with more and more tents that are showing up in parks and on public way. And the city isn't the only, this city isn't the only city that's going through this, but we are seeing that. And so this budget makes critical investments in doubling the bed count of our unhoused shelter network, which is really, really critical because we know each year that we do a point in time count through our Department of Family Support Services that the number of unhoused Chicagoans has steadily creeped up every year after making considerable progress in the past. And so I think that that's going to help with making sure that those who are unhoused or need assistance have a place to go, have a place to make sure that they're getting those resources. And so that's another demonstrable area.
And, you know, Craig, I'll just add one more thank you, Annette, to that. Our investments in community safety have been wide and far and deep. We're getting at root causes of violence in this city. We're also making the critical investments in just ensuring that we have more detectives. I made a promise to hire 200 more detectives by the end of my first term. We're going to meet that goal by the end of this year. We're already seeing some of the great returns on that investment, where I believe our clearance rate is over 50%, 54%, I believe, mm-hmm. roughly, which is the highest it's highest it's been in the last 10 years. We are going to have three brand new helicopters that will be a part of the supportive network of technology in this city. And I believe the other thing that it's important to note, that with the TIF surplus, which I'm sure we'll probably get into that a little bit later, you know, I've always have been a proponent of the TIF surplus going back into the taxing bodies. And so the TIF surplus that's going to go to our Chicago Public Schools, our students and families will experience the benefit of that surplus. The surplus that's going to go back into our community colleges. We have 12% increase in enrollment in our city colleges. The largest subgroup of enrollees are young Black men. And that's a testament to what we have emphasized in this moment. $20 billion of new investments, creating opportunities for our young people to find their purpose in summer jobs, while also investing in our community colleges so that we can establish the next generation of tradespersons. These are the benefits that folks are going to see. And to Annette's point around affordable homes, it's a big deal. And more families will have an opportunity to live in the city that they love or return to the city because they can actually afford to live here.
And before we move to some other areas besides the property tax, but obviously that's the thing that people are talking sure. about the most, is there a path to seeing that figure, that top figure of $300 million lowered a bit? Is there a way for, because that's what some of the alder people are saying, mm-hmm. is that we just want to see if it needs to be that high.
Well, this is a proposal. I've proposed my budget. It's balanced. The city council's responsibility is to pass it. And I've said from the very beginning that we are open to ideas of new revenues. And, you know, there are some ideas that we are still discussing and they are in consideration. You know, but the point though that I want to make sure that everybody is clear about, I made a commitment to invest in the people of Chicago, our young people, workforce, housing, mental health, community safety. That's in this budget, and particularly in neighborhoods that have been historically neglected. So this is an open discussion. We're going to continue to accept ideas. We're going to build a better, stronger, safer Chicago. We're going to do that together.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and we are with Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and his finance team talking about this budget and more. And let's pick up on where you started us just a few minutes ago, and that's shutting down or draining some TIF funds that might be more popular for people. Can you take us through how that helps the city? Because let's face it, TIFs are something that people keep hearing about, and I'm not sure they understand it, and I don't want to go too far into the weeds, but how does this give the city a revenue stream that that it can use?
Well, historically, the original intent of TIFs were to, create a revenue dynamic that neighborhoods that were blighted could benefit from, right? What we have seen, however, from previous administrations, they've used TIF dollars in particular, and quite frankly, they've used dollars that should have gone towards our pension to put into the hands and the pockets of the ultra rich and, large corporations. What has happened historically with TIF surplus, it has not gone to the taxing bodies in their fullness, even though there are laws that require and mandate, such a practice. So what we've done is, because this has always been a part of my value system and I've promised to do it, is that we take the surplus from the taxing bodies and we give these taxing bodies the maximum benefit from the surplus. So our community colleges, parks, libraries. Last year, just in our parks alone, we had waiting lists that have grown exponentially because the programs that are being held at our parks are on high demand. And so with the surplus, it's going to put the parks in a better position to provide stronger programming, to make sure that we can hire more people to extend programming. Again, our community colleges, we're looking at and exploring a satellite campus for Malcolm X on the west side that will be dedicated to individuals who want to get into the trades. So those TIP dollars, people will begin to experience the benefit there. And then of course, our Chicago public schools, like as a former public school teacher, as the only mayor in the history of Chicago to send my children to the public schools in Chicago, it's imperative that every single child in every single neighborhood has an opportunity to succeed. We're seeing the benefit of that in North Lawndale. We've invested millions of dollars into Chalmers Elementary and Johnson Elementary to expand the STEAM program, the Feeder High School, the Collins Academy. We'll receive those students, added another $2.5 million at the high school to make sure that we are creating an environment that those students at Chalmers and Johnson Elementary can feed into the Collins Academy and continue their trajectory in STEAM. So these are all of the economic benefits that the TIF surplus will yield for our public accommodations.
Let me move on to another area, because if there is anything that we keep hearing more of, it's people saying that the city is doing something that I think would be considered admirable. It has been paying more into the pension funds.
So I was already looking at Jill. I knew that question was coming. Yeah. I just gave her an eye. I'm like, here we go, Jill.
Yeah, but that is something that has been applauded. However, it's extra. And so you're going to have a lot of people saying, okay, it's a great thing to do, but we're in the middle of a crisis. Why is that still going, that payment still going to be made extra when it could eliminate the need for a property tax hike?
So I'm going to turn it over to Jill, our chief financial officer. But let me just say this first of all, the workers in this city have given their every day to serve in this city, and they pay into their pensions every paycheck. They don't take a holiday, they don't take a break, right? And by law, we have a responsibility and an obligation to pay into retirement. And here's why this is important. You think about the 41st ward or the 19th ward. You're talking about police officers, firefighters, educators. These are individuals that serve this city, and we have a responsibility to make sure that their retirement is secure. the program that we have set forward is going to save taxpayers $3 billion over time by doing the responsible as well as upholding the law. But this is why I have a strong expert in Jill Jarowski, who's our chief financial officer, who can further break down why this is so important for the taxpayers.
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. I think one of the key things that there's a value that we hold deeply in this administration is fiscal responsibility. The city in the past has made decisions repeatedly to not fund the pension payments in amounts sufficient to cover the benefits, to defer the costs of debt service, to sell assets. All of these things have put the city into the fiscal position that we're in today. When the city sold assets, we lost revenue streams that we don't have to support our budget today, forcing us to do things like look at property taxes. When the city deferred debt service, it increased our interest and principal costs in the long run, so we have a higher debt service cost today than we would have. And when the city only put in the statutory amount, and let's be clear, the city has always put in the required amount. It's never missed. But the statutorily required amount has been woefully insufficient. You know, 10 years ago, the city put in $500 million into the pension fund. It should have been putting in at least $1 billion. But the city adhered to what it was required to do and was heavily criticized for not putting in enough. So we finally have a policy today that we are going to contribute an amount that makes sure the unfunded liability does not grow. Because by only contributing the amount, by foregoing any extra supplemental payments, we have gotten to a point where our pension funds, the vast majority of them, are 20% funded. That is the lowest of any major city in the country. It's lower than any state. This is a debt we cannot get away from. And every year that we defer putting in an adequate amount costs us more in the long run. I think when people hear big numbers like $3 billion that the mayor just mentioned, it's just hard to wrap your mind around. We're putting about $1 billion of corporate funds in over multiple years, funds that have been reserved already. These are not funds that we're getting from taxes today. These monies have been reserved for this purpose. And that's going to save us $3 billion net in the long run. Total $3.9 billion fewer payments we're going to have to make, so we're going to net $3 billion. That is a massive amount of money that city taxpayers will not have to pay. So all we're doing is saying, for once, we are going to put in a sufficient amount. And we're not looking to say that what the state requires is sufficient, because it has never been sufficient. That is why we are in the disaster that we're in today with our pension funds. We have finally stabilized the funds, so they're not growing in unfunded liability. We do not want to go back to a situation where they are. This is an investment in the city.
And Craig, thank you, Jill. And over time, as long as we remain responsible and committed to this policy, you know, over time that number will get lower. And you know, once the casino is online, you know, we have a pathway forward where this payment, By the year 2030, we won't be in a position where we have to continue that payment. And I think another note that Jill talks about a lot is making sure that our credit rating is strong. And since I've been mayor, we've received a couple of credit upgrades over this first 18 months. And you know, Chase has had experience at the state where, you know, we talk about this all the time, because of the derelict of duty, you end up spending more money just to pay the interest, and you're not even getting at the principal. Chase?
Yeah, obviously, when there was Governor Rauner, there was a lot of money.
And that, sorry to bring his name, yeah, but I just, yeah, we had to just bring it up once, right? But people understand the gravity of our situation.
And the current governor has worked very hard just to get past that component, because of how damaging that was. I want to just bring one other item that just to stress that Jill made. This is not coming from current tax receipts, this payment. It was reserved previously to be paid. So folks that are interested in trying to reallocate that payment, just so they know, that money when it's spent is gone. It is not back here next year. So even if there is a move to try to use one-time costs, it only saves us a little bit of, it only pushes the problem down the road. And that costs us more money both next year and in future years.
Let me ask you about getting this bill, or the bill, this budget passed.
Yeah.
And that is, even some of your close allies are saying, I cannot support. I mean, and I don't want to single out Byron Sigcho Lopez, because he's not alone in that. How do you get the 26 votes that you need for this budget, if there is that distaste for raising property taxes by that much?
Yeah, look, this is hard, but I signed up for hard. That's why I became a public school teacher. You know, look, when you are faced with systems of oppression after decades of neglect, you know, you sign up to do the hard work. You know, this city wasn't dismantled in one budget, and it's not going to be repaired in one budget. That's why I'm committed to the long run. I promise to tell people the truth. And the truth of the matter is, because of the negligence over decades, we cannot afford to do more of the same, to what Chase has just articulated. If we don't do the right thing now, that problem just simply stays put. And look, my daughter is 10. You know, when she votes for me in 8 more years, I don't want her to go into the polling booth and question, you know, Dad, you had a chance to fix something and you didn't do it. And we're not gonna saddle that debt onto the next generation. And so what's in this budget is expanding youth and workforce development. What's in this budget is expanding sustainable, affordable homes and rental units. We're gonna grow our rental units of sustainability by 600 over the next 5 years. It's the largest revolving, every 3 years, loan opportunity for families, the largest in the history of the United States of America. What's in this budget is a commitment to community safety, to mental and behavioral health. What's in this budget, it's investment in our environment. 20% of the world's fresh water is right here in Lake Michigan, the St. Lawrence. The Inflation Reduction Act is going to create more economic opportunities to grow our economy through green and blue technology. This is an opportunity for us to turn the corner. Now look, this is an open discussion. People can put forth proposals. My values are clear. I'm willing to negotiate the details of my values. I just don't compromise them. Where our treasure is, there our heart will be also.
Last question. Is another try at a graduated income tax a necessity at the state level? And have you talked with the mayor the governor and any of his people?
Well, our team is in constant communication with the governor's team. There are a host of ideas that we are discussing. You know, one of the challenges right now, if I can just yield some of my time to Annette Guzman, around the PPRT, it was a particular revenue stream that we didn't anticipate we wouldn't have. And so there are discussions about how we can find other revenue streams that are progressive in nature to help us address not only the critical issues that we're facing, but we can continue to invest moving forward.
I would like to thank Mayor Brandon Johnson, Budget Director Annette Guzman, Chief Financial Officer Jill Jaworski, and City Controller Chase Raywinkle for spending the half hour with us. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.